Welcome to Inside City Hall, the official podcast of the City of Oregon City. I'm Jared Lyman. I'm the communications manager for Oregon City. This podcast was started as a way to give citizens an inside view of how the city operates. The complexity of how a city functions is more than can really be captured in a 30-second soundbite or a news article, or even in the city commission meetings where there are other items of business to attend to. In today's media landscape, podcasts are pretty much the only place for longer-form storytelling. In this podcast, we'll go deeper into the processes that govern the city, the policies that shape our actions. The goal is that after each one of these podcasts, you'll have a deeper understanding about your community and the officials who work within it. Our first podcast talks about something that pretty much all of us use on a daily basis, roads. So let's dive in. Today I'm speaking with Jason Thornburg. He is the Transportation Maintenance Manager for the City of Oregon City. Jason, thanks for coming on today. The reason I wanted to bring you on today is because at some point, theoretically, spring is supposed to start happening. That's at least what the calendar says. I don't know what the weatherman is saying right now, but it sure doesn't look like it. But with spring comes a lot more of the work that you guys do, a lot of the stuff that's really visible around the town. So that's why I wanted to kind of bring this out now, because streets are always one of those like few things that people actually identify that they know a city deals with streets. And it's also the one thing that's the most visible and people always talk about. So with that all coming together, I thought it'd be a good time to talk about streets in Oregon City and basically kind of cover everything we can so people know how it works, why it works, and what doesn't work. So again, thanks for coming on. So the first question then people wonder, and we'll just jump right into it when it comes to things like potholes. Potholes are really prevalent this time of year, so you can't really do a whole lot of fixing right now until things kind of dry up, correct?
Yeah, right now, like a day like today that was raining earlier today, and now it's sunshiny, potholes are going to get fixed with cold mix, which is not a great fix. Cold mix will come out. What we like to do is get a dry day. If you can get one dry day, then we can get 3-4 tons of asphalt, line the crew out, and they can go around and patch as many potholes as they can get in a day. But it needs to be dry to put the hot mix in.
Okay, so now there's one of the questions that comes up because a lot of people won't know the difference, and I'll admit I don't. So talk a little bit like difference between cold mix and hot mix.
So cold mix is exactly what it says. It's cold mix. It just sits in a pile. And it's what you would see on like a construction sites where they're just putting it on the edge of a steel plate. It's more of like a temporary fix. And then your hot mix it's the stuff that you would use to pave with. It's real actual asphalt. And that's what we...
So like the cold mix is the Band-Aid and the hot mix is actually just repaving just a very small little portion essentially.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when weather is happening like this, I mean, you guys are just kind of basically doing triage until you can get to a point in time where it's actually able to, because it's somewhere you got to balance the time and effort and resources to fix these things. It's going to be temporary if you're going to be out there every week.
Yeah. Yeah. We're really just trying to keep the collectors and arterials, Malala Avenue, Beaver Creek, you know, those type roads. Central Point has a lot of potholes popping up on it right now. So we're out there a lot. Just trying to keep those roads. We really don't even have time when the weather gets good enough to get into the residential neighborhood streets to really do much in there.
So has this winter, because this winter the weather's been insane. I mean, it's cold, it's less cold, it's, you know, freezing, it's not. I know that type of changing weather can have a deleterious effect on the roads. Has this weather been particularly bad this year?
I don't think so. I think it's been particularly bad in February and March.
It's bad for this type of year.
Yeah.
Okay. It's just lasted longer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where normally you would, I think that I plow more snow in March than I do in December.
It seems to be going that way lately. It's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what, I mean, was it last April was the first time we've had miserable snow in April. And now a year later, they're talking about it happening a year and one day later.
Yeah.
That's chance of snow again. This is ridiculous. It can't be easy for you guys because, I mean, when it comes to taking care of the stuff you have to do in the cold and then transitioning to the spring and summer weather, there's a lot of equipment maintenance that you need to do to switch over to that, correct?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like our dump trucks, they, not anymore, but all winter long, we have one dump truck that just has a plow and a sander in it all year long. And it just sits and waits. And a couple of our other trucks, same deal. And then, yeah, they're just waiting to go out. And then as soon as the weather changes, we take all that stuff off and we're getting ready to pave now.
And then, of course, it's going to snow again, so it's back on.
Yeah.
So when it comes to, finding those potholes, because, I mean, you obviously have priorities of which streets are going to get service first and so forth. How is that determined?
Well, it used to just be whatever, a couple of ways, whatever we find and then whatever the residents call in. But now we've got that. We're testing out that Rover app, and it's camera in the... We just put a camera in the front window of the sweeper, street sweeper, and she drives all the streets, and we're finding potholes that we didn't know were even there.
And that's a really cool thing. You segued perfectly into that. Is this? It's called City Rover, and we've been testing it out, although I think we're going to sign the contract now, if I recall what I heard on that.
Yeah, it's going to be a done deal for a two-year contract.
Yeah, it's a done deal there. So this is, I mean, it's... more than just a camera that sits in the windshield. I mean, it's used, everybody talks about AI right now with like chatbot, GPT and stuff, but this is AI being used for something a little more helpful than, you know, writing term papers for somebody who doesn't want to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. It collects the pictures and then it puts it into, I guess it's a cloud-based form. And then I log into their, I'm not a real technical guy, so I don't know. I just log into something and they got my password and I log in and there's my dashboard, and I can go in and I have to sort through and figure out what is an actual pothole, what isn't, which takes me not very long. But
it's got to be a lot faster than having to find them yourselves. I mean, have you been able to, even if it's temporary, fix more this winter than you have in other years because of this?
Oh yeah, quite a bit more.
Okay, so it's been a substantial difference.
Yeah.
How accurate would you say it is?
About half the potholes that it says are potholes are actual potholes. The other half are not. They're maybe a shadow.
Oh, okay.
They are a crack. During when it picks up potholes when it's raining, a lot of them are not potholes.
They're just puddles.
They're little puddles.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe something you can't fix with asphalt, but there's just a little depression there. Sometimes it will pick up a manhole or a water valve. It usually knows the difference.
And again, but you're not spending time out there investigating stuff in person. This is just you being able to tell by looking at a screen. So it's saving a ton of time and money for the department.
Yeah, it takes me maybe a second and a half to vet one of those. Just click on it. I know instantly, is that a pothole or not? And it's either approve it or decline it. And then I'm off to the next one. It automatically pops the next one up and the next one and the next one and the next one. And you can work through 100 of those pretty fast.
So once you've identified the ones that are potholes, then what's the next step on that list?
Well, then I kind of pick an area, which it's either, are we going to do arterials? We have a lot of problems on our arterials. So I try to do those first and then work downstream from arterials to collectors to residential streets. And then I can highlight an area and I can print out maps and it has a, they just added a new thing. It's got one of those little scan things that you can scan with your phone. What are those?
QR code.
Yeah, it has a QR code. And you can do that QR code with your phone, and it will give the guys a map on their phone right to where the pothole is.
Oh, no kidding.
So they can just, they have the map there. It's got a picture that shows what the pothole looks like, so which helps out a lot because a lot of people say there's a pothole on this whatever street. So you go out there and you're driving up and down the street. You don't know where this pothole is. But with the app, it'll show a picture so you know, okay, well, this is in the background. And, oh, there's McDonald's. Okay, so I know where that's at.
Okay.
So you can see landmarks in the picture. And then with that QR code, you just go straight to the pothole, patch it, and you're off to the next one.
So one of the other really cool things about this is the fact that, I mean, it lets you, kind of prioritize them and so forth. So, and you mentioned, you focus on the arterials and then kind of filter backwards that way. But there's also like the severity of the pothole can maybe like kick up a residential street above on the priority list, depending on the severity of that pothole.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something that I would notice when I'm looking at it. It gives you a severity number, but the severity number doesn't really mean too much yet because it's kind of still in that
that beta testing.
Yeah, which it'll probably get better over time. But right now, it's mostly just what am I seeing? If I'm seeing, that's a big pothole. We need to get that fixed.
So as you said before, the camera for this function, it sits in basically like the windshield of the street sweeper, because that thing touches every street in the city. I think you've told me before, like at least 8 times a year, right?
Yeah, between 6 and 8 times a year, yeah.
And obviously, you know, again, the main arterials, it's on there more. But when I first posted about this on our social channels, we got a lot of people saying, well, what about this pothole? What about that pothole? And unfortunately, almost all of them were within Oregon City limits, but not Oregon City streets, not streets that we're responsible for or really have any ability to fix. And it's kind of hard to describe to people the jurisdictional soup that is all the different spots out there. But a lot of the roads that people may identify as ours aren't really ours, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. Highway 213, 9090, both belong to ODOT. There's nothing I can do except forward those along to them. Beaver Creek Road going out of town from 213. That's owned by Clackamas County. Same thing. All I can do is just pass those potholes along to them. And there's some other roads, smaller roads, even some residential roads inside city limits that are still owned by Clackamas County.
Oh, I didn't realize that the county had some that are... Okay.
There's a few of them, like Jesse Court, Jesse Avenue, Salmonberry. Which one is it? It's Caulfield Road. We're actually doing a exchange, jurisdictional exchange with Clackamas County, because the road's in really bad shape. So Clackamas County is giving Oregon City like $95,000 to pay for a couple of ADA ramp upgrades, and then my crew is going to go in and overlay the whole street this summer.
Is that something that's commonly done? Because I haven't heard of a situation like that before.
It's the first time that I've been involved in it since I've been here. There are jurisdictional exchanges. Once the city grows out around a county road, then the county will try to give it to the city. But it's one of those where if the road's in good shape, then the city will take it. But like the city doesn't want to inherit it.
Yeah, we don't want to get a lemon.
Yeah, here's my street, and it needs $100,000 worth of repairs. You know,
yeah,
we don't want to take that.
So, and did that bring, you know, the costs and so forth? What is, I mean, average pothole? I know there's all sorts of variables there, but what would you say like the average cost of fixing a pothole would be?
Oh wow, I'd really have to break that down. I haven't really thought about the average cost of a pothole.
And it's something that kind of think that pops up in my head, because, I mean, you know, I've been the grumpy driver sometimes too. I'm like, just give me a bag of gravel and I can fill that up, and, you know, toss me like $20 for a bag. But there is so much material and labor that goes into this. It's not as easy as a process as people think it is it?
No, you know, and if we can really line out a bunch of potholes, say with this Rover, and I can send the guys out, if they can get two-man crew, pick up 2.5 tons of asphalt, about, say, $90 a ton for asphalt, and then they can get 50 potholes in a day.
Oh, no kidding.
That's a really good day for them.
That's way more than I thought would be possible.
Yeah, and you know, you're not going to get that every time.
Yeah, yeah.
It depends on the severity of the potholes, too. If you've got some really bad potholes that take some extra work, then you might be only able to get 15 or 20 in a day. Or if you run into an area where you've got a road that's got 10 in a row, well, there's 10 easy ones, you know?
Yeah.
So it varies pretty greatly from day to day.
So moving beyond the potholes, though, because as you know, we're getting to that time where we can do more road maintenance, what are some of the other things that you're looking for to determine the health or viability of any of our streets?
Well, you look at like the cracking in them. So I'm looking for cracks. I'm looking for how deep the wheel ruts are, some of that stuff. And then if I find a road that's really starting to crack, but it's not going to make either, you know, it's not going to make the rehabilitation list, then I'll get in there and we'll do some rut patching, maybe even do some mill and inlays at times. And we're gearing up for our slurry seal. So we've got the slurry seal program that's going to happen Right now, it's tentatively scheduled for June 26th through the 29th, and we'll be in a bunch of about close to 30 different neighborhood streets. We're going to be doing the slurry seal.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, yeah, and prior to that, we've already done the tree trimming, and then we'll get in and do some crack sealing in there to make sure all the cracks are sealed, and then put the slurry seal on it. Maybe some of them have a few asphalt repairs that need to get done, but...
So, I mean, yeah. Obviously you can kind of tell by the name, by slurry seal, but what is the benefit of doing that? Does it, like, basically prolong the life of the road, or...?
Yeah. Yeah, it takes... You're hoping to get 8 or 10 years out of a slurry seal. So, you put a road down, or say a new road's built, new neighborhood's built, and then you want to put that slurry seal on about 8 or 10 years after it's built, which I run into people that call me, why is my road on the slurry seal list? It's only 10 years old. Well, the idea is to catch it before it cracks.
Yeah.
So you put the slurry seal down. Hopefully you get about another 10 years. And then maybe in 10 years, you put another slurry seal on it. And now you've got a 30-year-old that looks like it's a 10-year-old road.
Okay.
And that's the idea.
So how does this whole process work? I mean, again, you know, some people may call and complain or so forth, but there's got to be this whole long list. How is this all started? What basically goes into the process of determining where you guys are going to go for that year?
So we have a five-year plan, a pavement maintenance utility fee five-year plan. So if I back up a little bit, the city, I believe in 2007 or 8, put in the pavement maintenance utility fee, and then that created, part of that was to create a pavement maintenance utility fee plan, a five-year plan. And so we build the five-year plan and then try to stick with that five-year plan as much as we can. And the five-year plan is, we do what's called a pavement condition index. We get that, which is another pretty high-tech deal where these cameras are on the front of vehicles and they drive every street in the city looking for cracks and defects in the road. And then that gives the road a pavement condition index, or a PCI, and 0 being terrible and 100 being pretty much hypothetical, like the perfectly
smooth. It doesn't exist.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the perfect road. So once a car drives on it, it's now 99. But, and then we work with a consultant. It's been Murray Smith in the past, and they crunch all that information, and then it spits out a big, pile of roads that's not really rank ordered, but it's roads that, oh, this should get a mill and inlay, and this should get an overlay, and this should get a slurry, and this should get a chip. And then we go through that and kind of look at it. And I've been with the city for 11 years, so I know a lot of the roads. If it says this should have a mill and inlay, and I think, no, it has concrete panels underneath it. You can't mill and inlay with concrete panels. So there's some of that stuff I just know. So we kind of create a big list, and then we send it over to the sewer division and the water division and the engineering, and then they look at it, and then they might come back to us and say, well, you want to pave this particular road, and we've had 2 main breaks in the last 9 years, so you definitely don't want to pave that road.
Okay, because you're going to be digging it up again.
Correct, that water line breaks again within the next 9 years, because you're trying to get a 20-year lifespan out of a paved road.
Okay.
So you don't want to dig a road up within 20 years after you've paved it. So that kind of keeps narrowing our roads down until we get this five-year plan built. And then a lot of times we try not to have the Pima five-year plan drive the water replacement five-year plan, or vice versa. We try to make them work together so their water replacement plan is not completely driving our Pima plan either. Everything gets narrowed down and you end up with a plan. There's also Murray Smith, when they're looking through all their stuff, they're assigning values to streets. So then we're trying to figure out, okay, we have, start out with, I think 2023, we're going to have like $2.9 million is what the Pima fund generates. We put $400,000 of that into what's called the preventative maintenance, which is slurry seal, chip seal, micro seals, and then we take $115,000, give that to my crew to do overlays, inlays, just rut patch, potholes, all that stuff. So whatever's left over, then you try to figure out what roads can you do.
So one of the things that is, I'm sure, affecting everything that you can do is the same thing that's affecting households everywhere, and that's the cost of inflation. You know, the same thing that's happening to the household where all their costs are going up and the salaries aren't necessarily matching is something that you guys have to deal with as well. Because, I mean, material costs have skyrocketed, haven't they?
Yeah.
So that's obviously probably, I mean, because that wasn't part of your five-year plan. We're not planning for, hey, inflation's going to go nuts. So what does that kind of effect does that have on your operations for the year?
It definitely changes what you can and can't do. You know, and like just slurry seal-wise, a few years ago I was paying $1.60 a square yard for slurry. This year the bid came back at $1.90. So I don't know what percent that is, but that's 30 cents on $1.60. It's pretty decent percentage
increase. And when you're talking about, I mean,
That's a square yard.
And that really doesn't cover a whole lot of road, does it?
No, we're doing 97,000 square yards this year.
So when you add an additional 30 cents to 90,000 square yards, that number adds up pretty quick.
Yeah.
And I can't do the math, so I'm not even going to try. But I'll let anybody who's listening pull out the calculator. I'm not even going to try that. I talk and write for a living for a reason. But so these types of things you have to make like adjustments to the five-year plan, I guess, fairly frequently.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Another thing, and I'm not going to go into the politics of this. We'll let that when we have one of the electeds on the show. But the talk of ODOT tolling and the concerns of added diversion onto Oregon city streets, streets that are going from ODOT responsibility to your responsibility. There's got to be a concern about the additional traffic on roads that were not necessarily meant to handle that load.
Yeah, I'm sure there's going to be more traffic on some of the roads, and we'll have to watch our collectors and our arterials like South End Road, I think, is going to get used more. Mulala Avenue will probably see more, and we'll have to weight those roads a little bit higher on our five-year plan. You know, they might have to get done sooner than we would have done them. And I think that, yeah, not getting into politics, but I think we will see an increase of, you know, traffic volume on those streets.
And then that just accelerates the need for the maintenance, because you mentioned before, I mean, it was kind of a joke, but, you know, the theoretical 100 score road, then a car goes on and it's 99. I mean, a road has a limited lifetime and cars driving on it, especially, you know, larger vehicles and so forth, has a detrimental effect, and it kind of adds up.
Yeah. Yeah. And trucks, heavy trucks make a big difference. I wish I could remember the numbers off the top of my head, but it's something like 6,000 passenger cars equals one 18-wheeler.
Holy cow. Yeah, wow.
It's something okay. Like that. It's, I wish I could remember the exact number, but it's a big deal.
It's somewhere in that neighborhood.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
So again, we're looking, if any of that stuff starts diverting, then that's going to, you know, have an even faster effect on the roads.
Yeah.
When you mentioned, you know, the ruts, some rut patching. I mean, that's one of the things that the excessive traffic, that's one of the like first visible effects you'll see.
Yeah, you'll see cracking or rutting. Yeah, and that's just rutting is just a road wearing, which is fine. I'd rather see rutting than cracking.
Really?
Rutting,
okay.
Yeah, rutting is just wearing out. It's just you're wearing the top layers of asphalt and rock, and it's coming off, and that's fine. That's what it's supposed to do. When you have cracking, then you're allowing water to get into your base. And once water gets into your base, it makes your base soft, and then you get more cracking, and the more water that goes into your base, and then pretty soon you've got, I'm sure people have seen them around here, these little divots in the road where a little mud's coming up. That just started with one little crack, and now the base is a problem. So now to really fix that, you've got to get in and fix your base.
So you have to like pull up, that's when you're pulling asphalt out.
Pulling the asphalt out, taking up 12 inches of whatever's down there, putting in 12 inches of rock, and then putting down more asphalt. Because some of the roads around here, it's an old city, and I've milled out 2 inches of asphalt and you hit big round rock and dirt right under the asphalt. So,
and that's not supposed to be there, I'm assuming?
You should have some kind of aggregate under there.
Okay.
Some usually 3/4 minus, 1 inch minus, something like that. But yeah, there's old streets around here, and sometimes you're if you got a 70-year-old street, that base is just gone now.
Another thing that I would imagine has to be a challenge is, I mean, obviously we hear about this. There's that big project that the county had to do, the slide on South End Road.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ground stability, too much groundwater and all those types of things. I mean, these all play probably a more significant portion in your job than they do maybe like in a more developed area like Portland or whatnot, where, you know, the infrastructure's been there longer and it's not as close to nature as our area is. So is that something that you have to deal with the impact as well?
Sometimes. South End Road definitely has there's a problem there. We had a road called Trillium right behind the hospital. That one slid, and we actually had to abandon a section of the road there. We had a slide on Holcomb right down in the corners before Redland. We just built a wall there. That was pretty easy fix. But so we do have some sliding stuff like that. Center Street, with the extra, we tried to make all the traffic go around it when South End Road was closed. But if you drive Center Street now, you can feel the difference from last summer.
What in what way?
Well, just there's some cracking in it. Oh, okay. And some of it's rutting out. We're getting some potholes.
Because it was, again, more low than it was used to or expected.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, switching gears a little bit, if you'll forgive the pun, what are the other aspects that you guys are responsible for are sidewalks and curbing and so forth?
Yep.
So basically, what's the process when it comes to that in terms of identifying areas that need to be repaired, identifying areas that maybe you're going to install some sidewalks? How does that basically work? So if somebody comes to you and says, hey, why don't I or why do I? How does that all work?
Sidewalks are kind of different. Sidewalks are the responsibility of the adjacent property owner. So if a tree buckles a sidewalk, that is the responsibility of the adjacent property owner. They need to replace that sidewalk. And we've got some programs. They can reach out to Public Works, and we can help them out with that.
Yeah, there's grant funding for that essentially from the city, correct? And is it $2,000 per or?
I think it's $600 a panel.
Okay.
Maybe up to $2,000. Something. Okay. I don't remember the exact numbers. Yeah. And sidewalk infill is a little bit tough. Sidewalks usually don't get infilled unless the property gets developed or there's a real need for it. Like with the new Gardner Middle School this year, we're doing a bunch of sidewalk infill in that area so that the kids can get from Gardner to the neighborhoods without walking in the mud or the street.
So we talk about ODOT and, you know, the tolling of the problems there, but there are some benefits to the relationship with ODOT in terms like we're actually getting grant funding for them to help with some of the safety for our kids here as well, correct?
Yeah. There's the project up on Holcomb that's going to happen this summer is grant funded through ODOT in the state of Oregon. I'm not sure exactly where the grant fund exactly comes from, but
it's all stuff above our head. We just know it's there and it lets us do some cool work.
Yeah. And that's going to put, I think, two new rapid flashing beacons on Holcomb, and it'll have sidewalk from Holcomb School all the way up to the new subdivisions up on the top end of Holcomb, right at the edge of town.
Was that a spot that the city identified as needing work done, and then you basically say go out to ODOT for the grant and say, hey, we want to do this, and then apply and so forth? Or is that basically ODOT saying, hey, we like this, here, we'll give you some money for it?
No, it's definitely apply for it. It's kind of community driven a little bit too. The community said, we want to do this. And a lot of that stuff does get driven by the community. The community says, look, we think we have a problem here, and they bring it to the city. And then we're obliged and we want to do what the citizens, we want to work on what they think are the problems. They're our boss. We want to work for them. So we looked at some stuff at John McLaughlin Elementary. And Holcomb School Road, or Holcomb School, is actually a Title I school. So it was much easier to get that Safe Routes to School grant. John McLaughlin is a Title II school. So it would fall way down on the list of getting any grant funding for any sidewalk infill in that area. So we kind of put those two things together. What does the community want? And what do we think we can actually get a grant for?
So it's that constant balancing act of, you know, competing, you know, desires from residents and other jurisdictions and so forth.
Yeah.
And you touched on this, and I was going to go to that as well. You guys really do rely on the residents to help you determine where work is going to be done and what work and so forth. So it's actually a really important process of hearing residents, and, you know, they may see something, they may complain, but they don't complain to you guys. And it's actually an important step of the process, an important part of the partnership. So what's the best way for a resident to get in touch and say, and report a problem?
There's a couple of ways. You can just call the Public Works front office. We've got a new phone number. I don't remember it off the top of my head. But you can call the Public Works. Then there's a...
But there's the MyOC app that people can do.
That's the one.
And they can go on the website. They can find it there. They can call. They can do the MyOC app. So we basically have options for people to report. Because again, as much as you guys are out there doing the work, you don't see everything. Yeah. So you rely on the eyes of the residents.
Yep. Yeah. We get a lot of work requests that come in, even for signs. That's one of the things that my crew does is signs. So that's where we find the majority of sign issues is by people calling them in. Hey, this sign's missing. Somebody ran that sign over. And then I know it's missing and I can send my guys out and fix it.
I see there's something I learned. I didn't know you were working on the signs as well. How often is that a problem? Is something going wrong with the signs? Is it actually fairly common or... people driving into them too much?
Oh, yeah, a lot. Yeah. No, I got a work request this morning. I can't remember what neighborhood it was, but some guy called in and said somebody missed the corner, ran over the sign, ran over the box, crashed into his little hand-stacked wall, and then backed up and drove away. So we're out fixing up a stop sign this morning.
Oh, man.
But we have enough sign-related issues, and then there's a federal... mandate, not well, I guess it's a federal program that with the aging society, baby boomers all retiring out, that there's a retro reflectivity standard that we have to meet. So we have to replace all the signs in the city within a relative reasonable time.
Is it so when you say replacing, is there like new technology that makes them more reflective or okay?
Yeah, like there are a lot of we've got rid of most of what was considered engineer grade, which is the old, and then there's a high intensity prismatic, and then above that is diamond grade. And high intensity prismatic is a good standard, but I have one guy that's pretty much all he does is sign work.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what I mean, we talked about like a road you want to get 20 years on lifespan out of a road. I'm just curious, is there a number for a stop sign for say without barring somebody driving into it?
If you can get 10 or 15 years out of a sign, it's a good lifespan. And it kind of depends on if it's in the exact right spot, maybe not directly, maybe under a nice tree that gives it some shade, but not so much shade that it grows moss.
And that's going to be balancing it because the sun's going to fade it, but otherwise it's going to turn into, you know, green.
Yep.
So, I mean, is that something else your guys are doing too? Is your crews are out there, you know, spraying or scraping moss off of signs?
Yeah, I'm trying to get about 6 seasonal workers this summer. I try to get about that many every summer. And if it's raining and we can't pave, then they're out weed whacking bushes and trimming back trees around signs and washing signs and doing that type of stuff.
So even, you know, with as stupid as the weather's been this endless winter, there's always a ton of work for your crews to be doing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it never stops. We just change gears.
See, there's that pun again.
Yeah.
Well, Jason, thanks for coming in today. I wanted to throw one more thing out there because, as you said, you know, we are starting to come up into that busy season. And one thing it's important for motorists to do is keep an eye out for your crews out there, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely want people to keep an eye out for all the different crews that are in the right-of-way. It is construction season, like you said, and there's going to be contractors out there. There's going to be my crews out there. There's going to be water line doing stuff, sewer line doing stuff. There's a lot of projects going on there on the city website, there's a map that people can go to and you can look that map up and find out where all these construction projects are scheduled for. But just because you don't see an area on that map doesn't mean there won't be any construction there.
Can pop up an emergency need or whatever.
Yep. And we might like rut patching stuff. We don't put on that list because it's so minor.
Yeah.
Cause we'll be out doing a little work in front of the hospital on Division. And then we might be out doing some work on Center Street Hill, and then we might be out doing some work on South End Road and some other places. So it's not big enough to put on that map, but yeah, definitely we want people to keep their eyes open and watch out for those cone zones and slow down.
Yeah, I mean, everybody complains about condition of a road, but then they also complain about road construction, you know, and I'm sure I know I'm guilty of both. But, I mean, it really is important for people to slow down, keep an eye out for the workers because, I mean, you guys are out there pretty darn close to moving cars. I mean, it's got to be kind of a daunting task sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, cars are going by at 25 miles an hour, 30 miles an hour, and they're going by 6 feet from you, you know, just on the other side of a cone. Sometimes you got traffic pretty tight, and you're trying to work right there, and my guys are good at watching for that stuff, and you try to keep an eye open for cars, and when you hear a car rolling up cones, you know you got to get out of the way.
I mean, I laugh, but I mean, that's really unfortunate, though, too. I mean, that's the thing. So if I can leave everybody with one parting thought today, it says, we enter into construction season. Please keep an eye out for the cones. Keep an eye out for our crews that are out there working on your roads, and hopefully we can get everybody safe home, safe and sound. Jason, thanks for coming in today. Again, I appreciate that. This has been Inside City Hall.